16th, actually April 16th, but doesn't it feel kind of 2018 to order. May I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Davis.
Here.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Here.
Mrs. Hickey.
Here.
Mr. Martiri.
Yep.
Mr. Moore.
Here.
Dr. Thompson is not here. Ms. Williams.
Here.
All right, the first thing we always do is recognize visitors and invite comments from the public. Anyone here is visiting, great to recognize you. Do we have any comments? Nope. All right. So then I need a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Mr. Martiri.
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Communications.
None.
None? Okay, I know we had a couple of FOIA requests.
We did, yes. We had two, both of them actually were regarding information requests about student resource officers. So we replied to both in a timely manner.
Excellent. All right, and by far and away, we are about to enter the best part of the evening, student presenters. We have Lauren and David from fourth grade at Lincoln Elementary and Alex from seventh grade at Roosevelt. In no particular order, if there's a order that they've worked out, go for it. Who's shooting first?
All right. The fearless duo are up.
Good evening, Dr. Condon and the Board of Education.
I am Lauren Reed.
I am David Owens-Hyatt.
We are both fourth graders at Lincoln School.
Tonight we are happy to be representing Lincoln School. As you will see, there are many exciting things happening at our fine, fine school.
To showcase just a few of them, here's the iMovie we created today with Mr. Godfrey.
We hope you enjoy.
You might need to make it louder, so go ahead and make it loud.
There we go, cranked all the way up.
Who's that guy bumping in the picture with Lauren and David? I don't get it.
Who's photobombing him?
Good thing.
No, Tom, the sound is just a little delayed. I noticed that when I played it earlier. Oh, no, it's not coming.
No.
Could be, yeah.
I'm not saying I have a solution.
But and we're not all watching you either.
Close it out and come back in is always the first thing to try, isn't it?
Shut it down is next.
Turn it back on.
I'll just leave and come back
in. I'll pretend this didn't just.
Can you feel it?
Yep.
Down.
It's nuts. Great faces, but no sound.
There's something like speaker on the projector.
This is Anthony's favorite.
Where is the audio?
No. I haven't ever heard you say you wanted that job either. Now we've got sound. Just need to go back. back a little apart.
Also, many of them.
Wow. Awesome.
Now we're cooking.
Who's the magician?
We are here today to share with you some of the exciting things happening at Lincoln School. This week, Lincoln is celebrating our theme.
Despite the cold weather, many Lincoln people have participated in our Walk to School and Walk to School Challenge today, and hopefully more kids will be walking to school as the weather warms up.
We are also doing a race-free lunch challenge. This is a competition where the first and second graders compete against the third and fourth graders to see which
everyone will be wearing green today on Wednesday to celebrate Earth Day. Also, many of the parents from the faculty will be in our classrooms teaching us about compositing and recycling and the purpose of Earth Day.
As David and I begin our last months as Lincoln pupils, we wanted to share with you some of the things we are learning in fourth grade, as well as our specials. In art, we are making endangered animals on paper mache, and we are also making birdhouses out of clay.
Lincoln always looks so beautiful, but the students are always hanging around the school. Here are some of the art.
Here are the first grade water lilies.
Here are the fourth grade birdhouses.
And there are the first grade dot dots.
System sends a message to your brain that your toe is hurt.
Ouch! Here we are in the Lincoln Library, where Mrs. Brower, Mr. Taylor, and Mrs. Clark work so hard to help us learn to read and to get books for us. Finally, in library, we have been studying poetry. We are very excited to welcome Michelle Schwab, a poet who will be visiting Lincoln School next week.
This year, we've also had several author visits, including Justin Roberts and Steve Cheek. Finally, since this is our final few weeks at Lincoln, we wanted to share some of our favorite things about Lincoln. David, what was yours?
Some of my favorite things were dressing up for Halloween and having Spirit Week. What about you, Lauren?
I also like Spirit Week because I got to express myself when a little more than I used to. And because I volunteered for the international class for doing Tai Chi with my mom and dad.
You sure are going to miss Lincoln School.
As you can see, there are a lot of things going on at Lincoln. We hope you enjoyed hearing about our fine, fine school.
That's a wrap.
A great presentation.
You know, it was great that you used the technology and weren't afraid to do that. And then it was even better that when it didn't work as well as it could have, you didn't get flustered. And you hung in there and then you made it work and it was great. So hats off to you. Nice job.
Thanks, you guys.
And you'll be coming here to school this fall, huh? That's a little weird, isn't it? Exciting, though.
You'll be getting.
Thank you.
So, Alex, are you?
School's most nerve-wracking time of the year, especially fourth quarter. Everything in fourth quarter is scary. Hello, my name is Alex Estapis, and today I will be discussing what each grade is doing along with the foreign languages. In case someone doesn't know what the foreign languages are, it's Spanish, French, and Italian. Let's get started. It's fun. I like this. We begin with fifth grade French. They are working on grouping two numbers together along with the like the phone numbers do. So it goes along the lines of something like 22, 22, 22, 122 and 22, just to be an example. They are also learning and counting the numbers from 1 to 100. They'll be discussing how to do math problems in French and telling of numbers of possession. Don't ask me what that means. I don't know. Sorry, guys. So continuing with fifth grade is CORE in LA. LA standing for Language Arts. Students will have been reading fantasy books on their own and are learning the unique qualities found in this genre of book. Their next writing unit is called Shaping Text, From Essay to Narrative Memoir. Makes me sad reading about that. Let's continue. What they are doing in science is wrapping up their life science unit and working on a cumulative project focusing on invasive species. You know, my sister's in fifth grade. They recently dissected a fish called a sea lion prey. Those are terrifying. Don't look them up. Social studies. They will be completing a mini project on the Hindi and the Hindi deities. They will begin to explore the ancient civilization of Greece, a fan favorite amongst them. Greece is beautiful, guys. Please go there if you have time. Math is usually divided into two, the regular math and ATP. What the regular math students are doing is learning, and the big goal is for students to understand that when you divide a number by a fraction, the number gets larger. Then they'll be learning about the unit on decimals. For the ATP students, they will be starting the unit called covering and surrounding. Students will then be exploring perimeter and area of triangles and quadrilaterals. Sorry if I didn't cover Spanish, Italian, and humanities for the fifth graders. I didn't get in the briefing, so I'm not doing that. So on to sixth grade. In Spanish, the students are practicing using adjectives to describe themselves and others. They are also learning about the cultures of some of the Caribbean islands. I don't know which islands those are, don't ask me. In Italian, the students will be learning about adjectives as well. They will be also watching a documentary about Il Duomo di Firenze. I don't know what that means, so don't ask me. I'm not Google, guys. I'm not smart. In French, they'll be completing a unit on telling time. They'll be working on expressions to describe the weather in each of the seasons. In reading and writing, they're finishing writing an essay on a character they're reading about. Next, they'll move on to a theme, and finally completing an essay to compare and contrast two texts. I remember writing essays in sixth grade for fun. I'm just kidding, guys. Writing essays are never fun. In science, for the remainder of the month, they will be investigating what breaks down foods inside us and how it goes throughout your body. In social studies, they will cross the Sea of Japan and explore this amazing archipelago. They will then look closer into the time period of the Middle Ages. In seventh grade, the grade I'm currently in right now, in Spanish, the students will be working on restaurant dialogues. They have also learned about Mexico's greatest muralist, Diego Rivera, and the murals he's made and tells the history of Mexico. In Italian, we have learned past tenses of verbs and we are learning to say where we went in past tense. Soon, we will be learning about Italy's geography and doing a project in it. I'm using the we pronoun because I'm in this grade. In French, they will study the third group of regular verbs. Guys, I'm sorry I'm not educated, but what's a group of regular verbs? Do they go to coffee regularly? I don't know. They will be learning from the Holocaust survivor Adele Zubidok and talk about her time trying to hide from the Nazis. They will also learn irregular verbs for purchasing school supplies. They will do research on a famous French-speaking person. Do you know Emma Watson was actually from France? Just like every other human being, this will not advance you anywhere, so sorry, guys. In Humanities, the students are reading and analyzing To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Then they will discuss and begin to also analyze the beginning of the Harlem Renaissance. I also don't know what that means. In writing, we will begin our creative writing unit and continue our poetry analysis. We will write original poems and study the usage of dialogue in fiction. In reading, we will be reading a story about Woody Guthrie. We will also pay close attention to the given role of music in social protest. In science, a presenter, Craig Overmeyer, seventh grade parent and long presenter of renewable energy. His info was thought-provoking and was concluding our unit in solar and wind energy. We will now be planting plants in the Roosevelt Garden. These plants are called the Wisconsin Fast Plants. I'm assuming they're from Wisconsin. In class, we will be growing Wisconsin Fast Plants. I just said that. This will help us further our research in heritable traits across generations. In April, we will answer the question on how do plants reproduce. Speaking more of science, the trout team will be preparing to send the baby trout into the vast, open, terrifying world. Bear with me, guys. Eighth grade, last one. In Spanish, they are working on vocabulary that revolves around things in the house. They will continue working with commands as well as verb tenses. They will try to squeeze in a novel if possible. In Italian, students completed a unit on daily activities and using the reflexive tense of a verb. What's a reflexive tense? I don't hear that in English. This month, they will be studying and the imperfect past tense and will talk about when they were younger. Then they will write an essay about when they were four in Italian. That sounds very difficult. They will learn also about commands. In French, they will be reading a poem written by Paul Éluard called Liberty. It probably ends something like this, Vive la Résistance, Vive la France, with the fist thing too. This will finalize a presentation by one of the three presenters that will come and share about their pen pals. In Humanities, students will examine debates about modern industrial food systems. They will explore controversies related to marketing, health, and environmental impact and industrial profit. In social studies, they will be analyzing the ways of which America established a tradition of youth activism during the civil rights movements and the Vietnam War. Currently, there are only two school sports going on right now, track and volleyball. I don't know the track schedule, but I'm on the volleyball team, and sad to say we took our first loss against Lincoln on the 12th. You guys wanted to watch that game? No, you did not. There was a game today, and now I'm speaking in present tense. We did, in fact, win, so we are currently 5-1. In summary, we students get way too much work, we are sleep-deprived, and we deserve longer days off and longer breaks.
Okay, and while you are invited to stay for the duration of the meeting, if, in fact, you could find something more productive to do with your time, you're all free to go. Those were great presentations, and thank you, Lauren, David, Alex, and your supporting cast.
Nice job.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Have a good night.
We need a motion to approve the consent agenda next.
As amended.
So, Rich, did you submit an amendment to the consent agenda?
The former name of the Citizens Council is now Community Council.
Okay, Community Council. So, changing Citizens Council to Community Council as an amendment, I need a motion to approve the consent agenda as amended, which includes minutes from the Board of Education meeting of March 19th, 2018, in closed session, payrolls, orders relating to payrolls, bills, and a treasurer's report. May I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Martiri?
Yep.
Mr. Moore?
Yeah.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
All right, board committee reports. We are starting with Nicole Thompson. Thank you for that in-depth report, Nicole. And we will move on to personnel with Rich.
We will have some action items later on in the
excellent. I didn't see anything in the packet from you, Stacy.
Nothing to report.
That you are such a great American.
I try.
Finance Committee, Cal?
In our packets, we have the payables for the month. We have treasurer's report and a township treasurer's report as well.
Right. Telling us our cut. Equity Committee is meeting this week, I think. Is that correct, Ed?
Thursday, yeah.
So we are going to be meeting this week, and we're taking up a pretty in-depth agenda. Facilities, Judy.
There's nothing new to report.
Sweet. Communications, Ms. Hickey?
I don't think I have anything specific other than what I have for outside meetings.
Excellent. And then the Gender Inclusion Ad Hoc Committee, either Rich or Barb or both.
We will be meeting on the Thursday. But we are about to meet.
Excellent. And to break up all those scintillating reports, we're going to have the district calendar review.
Well, and not too much to say tonight, although the board will see that the calendar review page in their packet takes us, hard to believe, to the end of June. It certainly doesn't feel like it outside. But between now and the forthcoming May Committee of the Whole meeting, there are two kind of major events we wanted the board to be aware of. The first is this coming Wednesday, the IAB National IAB Project Learning Event, which we'll talk about just a bit more later in the meeting. And then our Faculty and Staff Institute Day, the afternoon of April 27th. That's a school improvement day, and it will be focused on growth mindset, school-based PD.
Okay. Excellent. And so now we'll jump to outside meetings. Council of Governments, the next one is coming up in May. OPRF Community Council, Rich.
On the 12th, after a wonderful OPRF choir concert, I went upstairs to the community council meeting where Karen Sullivan, the Director of Communication, gave a presentation on how OPRF had been branding themselves over the past couple of years. And so some of the typical ways they are trying to brand OPRF. They also talked about how the upcoming America to Me, the OPRF 10-part series done by Miller, was sold to the cable company Starz, which will be coming out in the next month in a 10-part series. And so some of the members actually astutely asked, you know, did we have any way that the community would be engaged in that as in groups? And there wasn't a clear answer to that. But I know that from those questions, they're hoping to get something out about how the community can engage in after an episode or two episodes, we can get together and talk about those things.
If they serve pizza, people will come.
That's what I'm thinking.
Just saying. Youth Network Council, Barb.
I had a few things to share in the context of the Youth Network Council, let me know so that one of the things that comes up at these meetings that is worth mentioning to the board is the involvement of the youth interventionists who work through the Oak Park and River Forest townships. We pay in part for their funding, and they are becoming more active in River Forest than they have been in past years. There is a group that meets, well, one of the interventionists spends a lot of time at the River Forest Library talking to middle schoolers. There's a girls group and a boys group that meet over there. One observation that was offered was that during spring break, there were kids who were dropped off at the library in the morning and were there all day. And the interventionists noticed this and wanted to draw it to our attention. I know our social workers are also very appreciative of the work that's being done boots on the ground by the interventionists over at the library. They're helping our kids. Let's see, the 20th, the Youth Network Council was saying be careful on the 20th because it happens to be National Lead Day, the National Walkout, the anniversary of Columbine and Hitler's birthday, all on the same day. And they're anticipating that there will be some activity in connection with the walkout at OPRF. I don't expect that we'll see that here, but I offer it just as kind of a heads up. Also with the Youth Network Council, I landed on a committee that is in search of a name, School Council. And we are getting together to talk about a number of different things, and it includes me, a representative from 97, Stacy comes and participates in that group. Let's see, who else is on that, Stacy? I'm trying to think what other groups are represented.
I think it's just Ginger Colonisi from the high school.
Right, but it's an effort to get all of us talking about crossover issues that are important to all of the schools, and to try to get valuable dialogue going. We, Impact offered a terrific presentation last week on vaping, which
eye-opening.
Was very well attended and, yeah. And eye-opening. And so Impact is talking with us and with District 97 and with 200, and we're all trying to keep up with some of the issues that we all need to be talking about, and so that we can keep ourselves up with the kids. Mm-hmm. I also offer this. This came up. I don't know how many of you have been over to OPRF. This is the Stall Street Journal, and a couple of years ago, they put on the backs of all of the bathroom stalls, there is a plastic case. And in the case goes the Stall Street Journal. And some of the kind of information included in here is information on the common sleep myths debunked. And there's information on vaping, substance abuse, alcohol issues. And these things are read by just about everybody. And they were talking at the most recent meeting at the school council about how this is beginning to be taken as gospel. It's a very valuable tool for offering that kind of information in a way that's not threatening to the kids, it's not lecturing, but it is highly informative. And I will pass it around so you can get a look at it. But it's a great idea that is working very well over there for offering valuable information that may not be easy to convey in other formats. So I wanted everyone to see that. And I think that's about it for the Youth Network Council. I'm also up with the PTO Council.
Yep.
Ed, you can chime in if I'm missing anything. I think we shared PTO is always fun to talk about. There's always so much going on in the various buildings. One of the things that came up in the most recent meeting that I would share with you was a concern that was raised by one member of the group when I was talking about what was going on with the Subcommittee on Communication and an effort to offer a community calendar. And there was a question about how much information we would want to put out on a community calendar. We already have websites which have a lot of information about student events and that kind of thing. And so we're in the formative stages of talking about structuring a community calendar. And so there was a question about security issues and what kind of information we would want to put on that calendar. Ed and I talked about it, and I think as long as we have it out on the district website, it's really not a secret where these events are going on. And I don't think that putting them on the community calendar really offers any kind of a security challenge that is not already present. But I wanted to offer it to the board in case somebody sees something I'm not seeing. The subcommittee will be getting together, I believe, tomorrow to talk about structuring the community calendar. And obviously, we've got issues as a district with how much information we want to put out there, just because there's so much going on, and because there are events which we are unable to make available to the public, things like the Roosevelt musical, which we would love to open the doors and let anybody come in, but we can't really do that because they sell out. There are probably concerts and such that we could make available, but we would need to think carefully about what we would want, how we would want to open the doors to the community. But I think we do want to do that when it's appropriate to do it. So we're beginning to think about those questions, because we would like people who do not have children in the school community, but our taxpayers in River Forest, to feel welcome, to feel engaged with what's happening with the schools. And so these are things to think about, and I'm offering them to all of you. In case you have ideas, please tell me. I will keep you up with what we're talking about. At this point, we're still talking nuts and bolts, and we've got an RSS feed, which already feeds our calendars and has a lot of this information. But we will obviously have to filter and tweak in such a way that there's enough information out there, but not too much, that we are able to open the doors to the public when it's reasonable to do so, but not when it isn't. So it does present some challenges. But it is an effort to reach out to the community and to include them in all of the wonderful things that are going on at the schools. So if you have thoughts, please share them with me. Ed, did I miss anything?
Nothing.
All right. Then I think I can be quiet.
And Stacy, you're up with Inclusiveness Advisory Board.
We meet this week. Yes, I do.
And Nicole, River Forest Civic Association. Thank you, Nicole. Judy, Citizens Corps Council.
There hasn't been a meeting.
Excellent. West Cook Governing Board, the next meeting is coming up in April, or June, I think. I had to miss the last meeting, sadly, although I got an award, so that was sad to miss that. They mailed it to me. Ed Red Finance, I think, Ed, you and I both missed that.
We did.
I went.
Did you go, Cal?
Did you go, Cal? All right.
I went. They talked about assessment, Ray Clemens was a speaker there, and it was really a heated discussion, but they talked about the qualities and inequalities of park testing, and they didn't really have enough time. There wasn't enough time in the meeting to actually get everyone's opinions in. They talked about the current election. Made a point of saying, with two billionaires running, it's kind of a who's going to spend the most money is probably the one who's going to win. For Attorney General, I think it's the first time in history both African Americans are Democrat and Republican contenders. And they talked about the tier financing, which is in our Capital Watch in our packets.
Yeah, that we're going to have a pretty detailed discussion on that, and I'll throw in some extra on that. River Forest Subcommittee on Collaboration. So see, you had to talk again, Barb.
I think I've already said what there is to say. We are meeting again tomorrow night, and the main topic is the community calendar.
Excellent. All right, so the district meeting agendas, that brings you back up, Ed.
Yes, so we had several, of course, this month, as typical. The Universal Design for Learning meeting was really focused on UDL committee members deciding how they're going to proceed in presenting to their colleagues on topics surrounding UDL. The SLC, as the board is very aware, continues to work on the subject of standards-based grading and used the last meeting to kind of prepare for the forthcoming presentation that they'll be doing in early May to the faculty and staff. Had two PTO meetings in the interim. We discussed in March a number of items, but highlights included the spring students' standardized assessment update, a staffing update. We talked a little bit about the positions that the Board of Ed had approved for the coming year and why. We also spoke about the D90 Safety Plan Review Committee.
What issues came up with those on the positions that we approved, Ed, just to share?
Well, the board had asked that we start to communicate a little bit about why those positions are necessary.
So did any issues get raised by community members at the PTO?
No issues of concern. Okay. I think people saw value in particularly the addition of the math specialist. So it was a very positive conversation.
Yes, what?
And then, of course, at the most recent meeting, as Barb had referenced, again, some great conversations. Highlights included an explanation of the forthcoming text-to-tip program, which will be known as Support for You. It's now got a formal name. Also, the announcement of the forthcoming Education for the Future survey, which will be administered every other year. This is a survey that we do with faculty, staff, and, importantly, students. That'll be in early May. So, great meeting.
All right, superintendent's report, informational items.
So this is kind of an interesting superintendent's report tonight, because very rarely do we have no action and the number of information items that we do. But we'll try to keep things rolling, and many of these are things that are either kind of about to blossom or are things that the board has been following for some time. So, you know, obviously we can spend the requisite amount of time on each as the board's interest indicates. But the first is one that's very timely and something that the Board of Ed knows an awful lot about already. Some final figures were just posted, weren't they, Anthony?
Correct.
Okay. So Anthony's going to share a little bit about the tiered funding, our adequacy, and then it sounds like, Ralph, you may have some things to share, too.
Okay. So as the State Board of Ed announced, it's issued vouchers to the comptroller, so giving the way to the new tier funding to be distributed. For those of you who don't remember our thrilling presentation back in December about how we get to our percent of adequacy, you have a numerator and a denominator. So there is a local capacity target, and those local capacity targets are essentially the total dollar amount that we would ideally contribute towards our services provided. So that is basically our total receipts that we bring in, plus or minus certain things as we have ranked among other school districts in the state. We have a percentile rank that is capped at 90%, so the highest number we could have. Adding that to our base funding minimum, and that was, if you remember, those were the grants that were outside of this funding model that they brought into the funding model, special ed personnel, bilingual, and several other grants, general state aid, and our base funding minimum was about $1,069,000 plus our corporate personal property replacement taxes, so giving us a total numerator of about $21 million. Then dividing that by the adequacy target, or the total costs, and if you remember this, the graph of the total cost showed core investment costs, so salaries and things like that, per student investments that were and were not subject to the cost wage index based on the fact that we're in the northeast portion of the state, and then some additional investments. All of those costs together were about $15.3 million. I'm basing all of this on the latest spreadsheet that you would have seen if you went off the link on that Capital Watch email that we received, giving us a total percent of adequacy of about 138.9, giving us directly in the Tier 4 since we're above the 110% threshold. That Tier 4 allows us, from these spreadsheets, a grand total of about $1,900 of new money. That added to our base funding million of $1,069,000 is about $1,070,000, which is what we had budgeted, so those combined together were adequately estimated back in when you guys adopted your budget back in September. So we've been receiving those funds for the base funding minimum. I'm sure they will find a time in the new vouchering system here to give us the extra $1,892 between now and the end of the fiscal year.
Don't hold your breath.
Just in case, it might be delayed a little bit, but I'm sure we'll manage. Any questions at all about how the calculations, if you looked at the spreadsheet, it's multiple columns of calculations, but does come to be a very adequate number and also accurate number based on the estimations, predominantly because we're Tier 4 and we don't have any new funding coming to it.
Yeah, the idea of this model, right, was to drive new resources to underprivileged communities. We do not qualify as an underprivileged community, so it is not going to drive new resources to us, and it shouldn't. And we do have adequate, slightly more than adequate resources to cover the cost of putting in a basic education. Now, we do better than a basic education. We go above that. And the evidence-based model, to be very clear, is a basic quality education. It is not one with bells and whistles. And so we do a little bit more than other districts do, and we still manage to keep our costs right at or slightly below the median for similarly situated school districts. So we are not at all a high-spending district, but we are a high-performing district, and the districts we run with tend to spend more to get similar outcomes and put in place similar programs. So we're pretty proud of that. That's well done. I do know that accountability is going to be changing, and this jumps into a little bit of the Vision 2020 stuff, but it's tied together. the State Board of Education has put together a couple of it. I don't even know what they're calling them, task force, if they're calling them that or whatever. I'm on one of them, two of them, maybe three of them, that are looking at the... we've met a bunch of times, and yeah, I don't know which ones. But we're looking at a bunch of different ways to tie ESSA to the evidence-based model. ESSA is the Every Student Succeeds Act, the replacement of No Child Left Behind from the feds. ESSA has certain very specific requirements about resource allocation from an equity lens, and it requires reporting down to the school level, which is not quite something data systems in the state of Illinois have the capacity to do. So we are working on recommendations to get our data systems up to snuff and be at least minimally ESSA compliant going forward. And so we're working, us and a number of other organizations are working with the state board on those issues. I think one of the strongest things that's going to come out of this collaboration is going to be on the new accountability metrics, because the accountability system will now highlight whether or not a school district actually has the capacity to generate the expected outcomes. We're not changing expected outcomes for anyone, but if you go to, you know, pick a impoverished community, Harvey, Dalton, East St. Louis, and the school districts there have 58% of the resources they need to put in place an adequate education, we could probably expect that they are not going to meet expectations across the board in student achievement. However, as the new money comes in under the evidence-based model, there is a rubric to evaluate how they do their resource allocation going forward that will make the process more informative and allow for continuous improvement and moving the needle on student achievement even short of full capacity. So it's going to be a win-win, I think, and it's going to change the entire accountability system from one that's punitive to one that's informative and does allow for this continuous improvement, which is really what you want out of a accountability system. Yeah.
Is there a support system in place for lower achieving districts so that they know how to implement this?
Well, yes and no. Yes and no is what my honest answer. There's Illinois Empower.
Right. So that's really designed, though, for school districts that districts, saying districts and systems at the same
making
time,
it,
that are really struggling. So to qualify for Illinois Empower, you are performing in the lowest tier. Now, the mid-tier has the option to participate in that if they wish as a pilot district, but they're not required to. And then once you're starting to get up to the higher performing tiers, commendable and exemplary, there's really no requirement to participate at all.
Although I might bring to this board, I've had some conversations with the state board, whether or not we should be a participating member of Illinois Empower as a model district that collaborates with underperforming districts, and maybe devote some of our time to sharing some of our best practices, et cetera, with other districts. So this would be something to consider. I know Ed,
like
just
kind
what
of
you
a
wanted
mentor.
To hear. Yeah, kind of a mentoring thing. But as far as, so that's what's in place. But it's not well funded. I think that's an easy thing to say. And the State Board of Education is woefully understaffed, especially for such a sea change as moving from our old formula to the evidence-based model.
So it's just kind of interesting that, you know, we've seen so much in education over the years with mandates at different levels, and then it's great to have a mandate, but...
Okay, so this isn't a mandate, so there's
no,
the
know,
challenge,
but,
yeah.
But they don't do the support that should go along with it to ensure the success of...
One guiding kind of principle was the calculations are based, correct me if I'm wrong here, that... the different characteristics or supports that are lacking in a district that qualify a district for, you know, to be in tier one, two, or three. The money that is released in good faith should be used at for those, if you're missing six of those particular indicators.
Well, yeah, so but here's the challenge there, Rich. So I don't know if you followed the state board's budget requests, because I'm sure that's what you all stay up looking for, is what the State Board of Education asked for funding for next year. But its budget request for fiscal year 2019, we're in fiscal 2018, which ends July, was 7.2 billion more than what was allocated by the state to K-12 education this year, 7.2 billion. Because that's how far short school districts are statewide of their adequacy target when you take it all in together. What they put in new money this year was 359 million of the 7.2 billion. Meaning, there's not really gonna be a district that's gonna be able, that's the tier one or tier two district, that's gonna get enough in new resources to fully fund probably any of the 34 elements that they were initially 27, but the way the state board
subcategory
ran the model, they ended up with 34 categories to implement probably any one fully, maybe in some cases tier two interventionalists or something
sure.
like that.
Never.
Or PD. So part of what's going on, and I will give the Management Alliance, which consists of the Superintendents Association, the School Business Officials, school boards.
IASA.
And IASA.
Illinois Principals.
So those organizations have worked collaboratively, actually, with my organization, the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, and we've designed a number of trainings that have been web-based. They've been provided around the state on the evidence-based practices, which gets down to the detail of effect sizes, so that some of the highest effect sizes are some of the lower cost things. And go back to professional development, evidence-based, embedded in the classroom professional development moves the needle on student achievement more than some of the other evidence-based, right? It's a higher effect size. So that's being done as a training device for the supers, so at least they would be able to make recommendations to their board on resource allocation. But their boards make the decisions. And so it'll be interesting to see how much support for boards is going to be going on. And that's a real challenge in the state of Illinois when your State Board of Education it doesn't have adequate personnel and it doesn't have adequate resources to do the job. I mean, so there's going to be some work done on training at the school board level. But frankly, school boards are one of the weakest links in this, because different people come to school boards with different skill sets and knowledge bases in education and education policy, and they either are like this board and they all take the time to learn and have a great board that's highly functional and has robust discussions that are substantive, or they're like, and I could pull in some other boards that function very differently than we do that really aren't that far away from us.
But like you said, these checks are being cut right now for fiscal year 2018. It's the end of 2018,
right.
Those superintendents need to act pretty quickly when those checks are cut and sent. And I think the guiding principle would be, like, if 12 of these indicators are not present at all, at least this money will help get the ball rolling.
Right, but it's still, to your point on mandates, actually, it's really great you raised that, Judy, because this is not a mandate setup. So Illinois will always be a local control state from a governance standpoint. So while we have all these evidence-based practices literally identified in statute, and the funding goes in tranches according to the practices based on your school district's demography, there's nothing to compel a local school district to apply their resources that way. However, what we're trying to do, task force might be the wrong word, whatever these things are that the state board has set up, advisory groups, whatever, one of the things we're trying to do is make the reporting process one that's far more transparent, so that stakeholders in the community can understand whether or not school boards are making appropriate resource allocations. And that's a good thing, because let's say you've gotten some new money under the evidence-based model. Let's throw you down in tier one. So that means you had 64% or less of your adequacy target. Let's say you're at 45%. And after 3 years of funding under the evidence-based model, you're now at 54%. So you've bumped up a little bit, but it's just a little bit. But you've shown no student improvement. Well, then let's look at your resource allocation. And they're going to have to report back on whether or not their resource allocation follows the model. And if it didn't, then there's a place for correction there. Wait a minute, reallocate your resources in accordance with what the evidence says works. So, I mean, it provides for that kind of continuous improvement and information that we didn't have under the old accountability system. The old accountability system simply generated false negatives all over the place. You had no idea why student achievement wasn't happening, including whether or not a district had the capacity to actually attain expected outcomes. So it's a whole new ball game, but it's going to require a significant new investment from the state.
Well, although we're not benefactors of the, you know, a check being cut, the training that those other districts would get, even though we're expert, maybe us, the board members, I would be interested in knowing how that professional development is being offered. What is that for other board members? So we can go on to the next topic.
Valuable and interesting information.
That jumps us up to your intergovernmental agreement.
Yes, so the Village of River Forest, the River Forest Township, the River Forest Park District, and the River Forest Community Center have all indicated a desire to conduct a feasibility study about the possibility of renovating or redeveloping the community center site for a higher and better use. They are seeking the non-financial support of the other major River Forest entities in doing so. Board members have in their packet a copy of an intergovernmental agreement regarding a feasibility study for the potential rehabilitation, renovation, and or redevelopment of the River Forest Civic Center Authority building. And those entities that were interested in conducting the feasibility study had asked if you would please take a look at it and then consider the possibility of joining the intergovernmental agreement as a partner in the future. Most of the entities, the other entities, are on a similar timeline where their boards are considering the IGA here late in April and then possibly bringing them back for board action in May if the boards decide to do that. If you had a chance to take a look at it, there are some interesting elements of it that are really important. I think probably the most important is that the funding for this would be coming out of the Madison Street TIF. So there's no cost, so to speak.
The funding for the feasibility study?
Correct.
Okay.
So no cost for any of the groups that have indicated the interest to pursue the feasibility study, nor for any of the entities that might act as partners. The River Forest Community Center, of course, most folks are familiar with the building. It is an interesting kind of unique entity itself because while it's a public agency or organization, it is not funded through public dollars, tax dollars. So it kind of puts it in a unique situation. However, within that building, of course, is housed the River Forest Township. There are programs from Oak Park River Forest High School. Other community programs we actually have, as the board is well aware, the partnership with the community center on our blended preschool housed there. So it's really a kind of an interesting dynamic, yes, and the way it serves different entities or different stakeholder groups, I guess I should say, within the village.
And they're one of our important preschool feed programs, generally aside from our partnership with them.
Absolutely.
They have a long-standing preschool program. It's very active preschool and toddler programs.
So I present all of that as kind of food for thought.
And did anyone have any questions or comments on either whether or not we should partake in this or the language contained expressly in the agreement itself?
Nothing really jumped out at me, but I know you probably have some suggestions.
Yeah, I might have a knit or two.
Might have an idea or two.
Well, it says the parties desire, this is on page 2 of the agreement, 68 of the packet, as far as I could tell. The parties desire to do this collaboration and do this study and work together in furtherance of the, quote, redevelopment plan and project for the Madison Street TIF district. I think we should just throw in as of the date of this agreement. And the reason I say that is the village attorney, Greg Smith, was just quoted in a newspaper article about the Madison Street TIF, talking where someone was complaining that a potential utilization that they're talking about in the Madison Street TIF, specifically the acquisition of residential property, went against the spirit and letter of the plan. He said, basically, the village has the ability to amend the comprehensive plan if it determines it should be changed in this regard. So signing on to something that could be changed at any time without our input going forward, probably not good, but if we could tie it down to the date of the agreement, then we know what we're agreeing to do a feasibility study in accordance with and what we're trying to collaborate with. So I think that would be an important thing to just tie down. There's another, it's more of a legal nit that comes near the end. It's a standard boilerplate clause, other documentation. It's section 12. Party shall take such other steps, blah, blah, execute such other as shall be reasonably requested by party. We're agreeing to help in a feasibility study. There can be no instance where anyone should be able to request us to execute a document, nor we should request. It's a feasibility study. So I think that while it's a boilerplate provision, this should just come out to eliminate ambiguity that there's going to be some sort of creation of any kind of legal liability or role or responsibility for the school district as we go forward. I would just take that out. But other than that, I see my perspective is we should be engaged. We should give our input to the feasibility study. We ought to see if anything that can be done from a redevelopment of the community center could make it better from a D90 utilization standpoint and from a utilization of the kids that go to D90 and their respective families. I mean, so I think we have something to say there, and we should certainly work collaboratively with the Park District and the others in being part of it.
May I ask a question regarding your first item? What section was the element pertaining to the comprehensive plan?
It was in all the whereas is in the beginning.
Oh, the front section?
Yeah.
Somewhere in the whereas.
Page 68.
Page 68, yeah, I think it's the last one.
Yeah, the last
whereas. Whereas the parties desire?
Yeah.
And did you
just
wish that it be struck?
No, just say Madison TIF District as of the date of this agreement.
I see.
Okay. So the way that the TIF exists, whenever this is
done. Yeah, and if they change the plan, if they amend the plan and say they want to put it in an industrial center, you know,
right. As
I don't want to be part of a feasibility study for an industrial center down the road.
So would the wording be as of the date of execution of this agreement?
Yeah. Okay. Or, you know, yeah, any of those, fine. Just so that we have it fixed in time, and then I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
My question is, we did not sign off on to the TIF. We didn't join.
Right.
You know, in the intergovernment agreement with the TIF, and so I view that as an umbrella. And while I agree, we do want to have our input. We do want to look at, you know, what is best for the, you know, for the community and the, you know, and the people of D90. But if we didn't agree with the,
yeah, that was different. So that was on
TIF. Why would we?
It wasn't even that. It was the terms of the TIF as it impacted declaration of a surplus, and the way the language was drafted there, we couldn't accept it. It was overbroad, and it allowed the village, even though we don't assume that they would do something like this, but it would allow them to reimburse themselves for ordinary administrative expenses they're occurring now out of TIF money, which basically means building reserve because they've already levied taxes to pay those administrative costs and salaries.
No, yeah, I remember.
And then reimbursing themselves for it out of the TIF, and why we didn't think that was an appropriate, why we wanted that language cleared up is if you look at how a TIF is structured, the TIF levy is basically the sum of all of our levies on the growth and value of the TIF property. So we're one of the biggest stakeholders in that growth. And so we're one of the biggest losers if through this ambiguity a village decides to reimburse itself from TIF revenue for administrative costs it's already levied against the taxpayers through its tax levy. So we couldn't, and because they wouldn't give on that, because that language, that same bad language, was in a prior agreement and earlier board had accepted, we weren't able to reach a meeting of the minds, and so that's why we backed out of that. But it didn't really get to this. we didn't really get to, nor did we have the authority to get to the substance of the TIF plan itself. That's beyond sort of the scope of our authority. The scope of our authority was to review the portions of the intergovernment agreement concerning the declaration of surpluses, which directly impacted the district's interests.
So then, since 1993, has D90 been part of the Civic Center authority?
No.
No.
So what, and who runs the Civic Center authority?
That's
who is that comprised of? That was another question.
Yeah, so that's part
the
of
township
this.
Runs it.
Yeah.
But who's on it? What is it?
It's a separate, it's a board. There is a board.
Appointed by? Elected by?
No, they're not elected. The Civic Authority was created by River Forest residents. Because they wanted to buy the place.
They were gifted the building,
right.
The state of Illinois, like, I don't know, back like maybe 30 years ago, something.
So it's
kind of
like a McCormick Place type of thing. But, I mean.
Oh, that's so reassuring. What a great way to put it.
As far as the authority goes, it's kind of like a McCormick type thing, but the running of it was given to the township board. So the township board actually runs it.
Okay, so the township
so
board.
The township board is
controls the
civic center.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's just kind of my question. If we're not part of that, what is the purpose of this? I don't really even get the purpose of this.
I think all we're doing is giving
that makes decisions about
right, and that would be on the ultimate in my understanding running and operation of the facility. This is sort of this, what should the facility look like if we're going to modify the facility stage. So all we're being asked to be part of is this study to see if, in fact, they should reconfigure the extant community center or maybe move it to or make an adjunct for it at the Lutheran Social Services Center that the village acquired, or some combination thereof. So we would just have input in that, and we'd be part of the planning process. But no, we'd have no control over the thing at the end of the day, and nor should we. But I mean, I think we do have an interest, given the programmatic
or stakeholder.
Well, we would certainly like to know how that space is going to be developed.
Absolutely.
And used.
And
potential
and,
for future use
and if
by
it,
us.
Right, and if it's going to be, and even though the study is TIF funded, remember,
right,
one of the biggest stakeholders in TIF money is us. Because we have one of the bigger levies. And so when the village declares a TIF, that growth in the EAV of the TIFed property is still levied at all of our combined levies, the park district, us, the library, the village, blah, blah, blah. But our levy is bigger than all theirs. And so it's we make up the biggest part of the funding for the TIF district. So I think we have kind of an interest in how this plays out.
It comes down to like optimization.
Right.
You have a building that will be redeveloped using public funding that will be used by the public, and it's wise to plan it so that the building can be optimized, used.
And our future interests
right,
can
at
be
at many different times of
for.
The day and evening by a lot of entities that can,
well, there's been a lot of discussion over the years, just questions about from the public, I think, you know, how the property taxes are paid on that particular building. So I think, you know, those questions will compound if it all of a sudden is within a TIF district. If you touch the building during the time of the TIF, that affects, you know, how property.
But I think the good news is if this is a chance for collaboration with the other governmental authorities at a very high level and a planning level before things are done and before decisions are made, so that's a good thing.
So that we get to be part of that.
Yeah. And at least, you know, whatever the D90 input may ultimately not become part of the final deal because we're not the decision maker, but at least we'll have had the chance to have our say, look at it, think about it strategically, think about how it impacts not just the programs we currently offer, but where they would go in the future, and what the needs of our student population and their families are, and what should be available to them in our community. And I think that that's a positive thing, and it's positive to collaborate with them on this.
This is the first reading. Is this coming back then?
It's just being presented as an information item for board's discussion and consideration. It sounds like, maybe I should ask more explicitly, is there a general consensus you'd like to see it again with the recommended changes as a possible action item next month?
Well, the other entities might have
recommended changes
too, yeah.
Yes, they may.
So we'd like to see it with everybody's changes in it before we entirely sign off on it. Probably
would you like
a very
to see
good
it as
idea.
An action item, though?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. I'm hearing yes.
If there are other substantive changes, we'd like to know what they might be.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Stacey, you're good with that? Yeah, mm-hmm. It seems like it's unanimous around the board. So it's all head saying yes. So let's get that
all right.
As an action item.
Okay, so the next item we have tonight is, and I'll be fairly brief with this, but I did want the board to just be aware of how things are progressing. As the board is aware, we are supporters of the Vision 2020 initiative, and in your packet there's just a brief overview of kind of the progress that's been made in the four main areas. As you're aware, the four main areas include equitable and adequate school funding, highly effective educators, 21st century learning, and shared accountability. And in each of those realms, in the last several years since this has been in play, there's been some significant progress. Obviously, we spoke at length already tonight about the most significant in the equitable and adequate school funding category. In the area of highly effective educators, the needle has been moving on trying to address licensure issues, trying to ensure that that the state is being responsive to forthcoming teacher shortages. And being out ahead of that. In the area of 21st century learning, there's been, I think, a great deal of movement forward in technology, access to technology across the state, particularly in those communities that in the past had trouble getting infrastructure. So that's probably been the most notable progress that's been made there. And then in the area of shared accountability, again, we talked earlier about the Every Student Succeeds Act. Well, that will officially replace the EBAM, which was the balanced accountability model and is still technically the law of the land here in Illinois. The point is that we're moving toward a place where what really matters is student growth. And that'll be kind of at the fore, certainly in District 90, as we proceed with all of our plans, particularly our strategic planning, how we can continue to move from a place where high student achievement and attainment has been what has been celebrated to a place where it's all about continuous improvement and ongoing student learning. That is a sea change, and it's going to be, I think, initially first reflected on our school report card in the coming year, and then increasingly so in the years moving forward. So we'll probably change the way we do what we do in some ways. In other ways, it's not going to change it a bit. High quality instruction that's aligned to the standards,
that's
the way forward.
Now, you know how Ed always compliments everyone and on the face of the earth, and he's like the nicest human being. But here's one where Ed needs to be complimented a little bit. We've been out in front mostly because of Ed's willingness and leadership on the issue, and not just sort of tooting our horn on where we're good, but and on finding those few areas where our system is not serving all our kids the way it should. And not only haven't we tried to hide that, which many administrators would try to do, especially in a high-performing district when you can, we've thrown it out on the table, and we said we're going to directly address it, and we're going to get rid of it, and we're going to be a district where truly all children have the opportunity to achieve to their potential if they decide to take it, right? And that's been noticed. And so, number one, your willingness as a superintendent to step out on that is a big deal. And I, for one, certainly appreciate it. And I want everyone to know that that is not common, that many superintendents would, in fact, be uncomfortable with throwing failings out in the public and trying to address them. So, Ed, that's great. And number two, I just want to tell this board that's why I'm honored to serve with you. And in a way, I'm sorry, very small way, I'm sorry I'm leaving in a year. because it's really been this board and just the prior iterations board that has moved down this path of saying, let's make District 90's reality and vision the same thing. That's a hard thing to do. Systems change is a hard thing to do, and every one of you have worked to make that happen, and I'm just proud to be part of it. So. We ain't hiding, we're taking it on, and I think I'm gonna force you to take it on a little bit more with Illinois Empowered and some other things, but we've done some things right. And so
I know you're good at math, but you do have like a year left. So, you
know. Less, right? Because the April
less.
Elections are when?
A long, slow ride.
But you can't leave until the new person is
That's
sworn
May,
in,
isn't
so.
It?
Actually, yeah,
yes.
May.
So the next item we have pertains to the IASB. Again, this is really just as much as anything notification. In the past, D90 board has not necessarily felt strongly they wanted to put forth a resolution, but I remind you just periodically that that's something you can do. These are items just for the community's awareness that the Illinois Association of School Boards considers at the November conference. And you have across the state, you know, numerous resolutions that school boards put forth and are debated and discussed, and occasionally those resolutions are voted on and approved. So really, a resolution is something that becomes a plank of the Illinois Association of School Boards platform and what they believe in. And just wanted to remind you that that's an opportunity you have.
And we should think about it. If there are things that we think we should be weighing in on, based on our experiences with equity, or Judy, I know you've looked at some of the stuff on the gun things. I mean, I don't know if there's a resolution that can come out of that for school boards to consider, but
there's so much that's changed just in the last
right.
2 months.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, maybe we ought to think about this maybe and see if there's a place where we could weigh in with a potential resolution for the statewide school board association to consider.
I'm not suggesting it, but can I ask, when was the last kind of communication or deliberation about park testing? Because I know the superintendents did put something out 2 years ago, I believe, a position on park, and that got rid of it, the park test.
So the high school superintendent.
At the high school,
okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they did.
And so did elementary superintendents weigh in on that in
yes.
terms of time?
Well, so there's a percentage of elementary superintendents that have been advocating strongly for the removal of park, or the replacement of park, I should say. That chorus has risen once information came out about the fact that there would be a board of public help me, Anthony. Yeah, we're gonna be ordering a new park, not a new park test.
We're gonna enter a new
RFP. Now there's gonna be a new request for proposal on your standardized assessment. So I don't know what will come of that. The reality is that at the high school there wasn't an alternative. The fact that they have SAT or
yeah,
they
that
had
was
ACT
my next
report.
Question. The alternative being
really.
Right. So at the elementary
there's
level,
not there's not something really sitting there, or we won't already have been considering it.
It's really not.
Big can of worms, but
yes. That's a good question.
Well, it's an important can of worms.
Request for proposal. The next item we have is just an update on the Village of River Forest Tax Increment Financing District on North Avenue. There's some information that we've shared in here. We received most of this information as an entity in the village. Anthony's actually going to be attending this meeting in April. That's really slated for residents and business owners. And then I'll be with Eric at the Joint Review Board meeting scheduled in May. Not sure where this will go. They're moving forward on it in a similar manner that they did with Madison. There were some, I think, takeaways from that experience that they're trying to apply here, specific, particularly an eminent domain issue. But the process seems to be following a very similar trajectory.
Yeah. One thing in the fact sheet, just for clarification for the board, if you look at page 84 of our packet, it's just sort of a basics 101 on TIFs, and there's about midway down the page, not quite, will my property taxes go up as a direct result of the proposed North Avenue TIF? They answer it no, the answer has to be yes. It is not a no. And so here's why that is. Property taxes, at their most fundamental, the property tax rate is equal to the levy of the taxing authorities divided by the equalized assessed value of the properties being taxed. When you have a TIF, you take one small portion of your community and say, all right, we're fixing its value as of a date certain called the base
right.
amount. Let's say 2018, for this year. That means all growth in value of that is no longer subject to the taxing authorities, which means you've artificially lowered the EAV subject to the levies.
And
so the rate
the
will have to go up
else.
To make up,
right.
because the levies are still going to be the same. So the rate will go up, meaning all non-TIFT properties will be paying slightly more because the growth in value of this one property is off the rolls. That's how the math has to work. So this is probably was probably meant as more of a long-term thing. The goal, of course, is at the end of the 23-year cycle, when this property comes back on, it will become a very high-end taxpayer, and that will drive down the rate for other people in
which
their
did work in the situation
which
of the River
did work
Forest
in
town center.
So it's not quite accurately worded,
right.
and the math can't work the way they say it
works.
Doesn't
talk about the long game.
It doesn't talk about the long game. So if they were talking about the long game, the answer would be probably not in the long run. You can still not say definitely no. But if it's the short game, that is the first 23 years during the life of the TIF, the answer has to be yes. So I'm just pointing that out since I just had to testify at the TIF task force in Springfield a month ago, and so we had a walk through.
And it is
stuff.
A large section of property that they're looking at. The North Avenue.
Whole north.
Yes.
Yeah, the corridor.
So we're not talking chump change here, probably. It's hard to know.
Hard to know.
Okay.
Barring movement from the village on this. Is it the subordination clause or subrogation clause?
There was that, and there was the costs, the administrative costs that we were talking about.
So barring any change on that, there likely would not be the opportunity for an agreement on this TIF either.
Probably not. I mean, it'd just be hard to accept those terms. And, you know, their position is eminently rational, you know, right? They're not taking an irrational position at all. They're basically saying, but a prior school board signed a contract with this language, and I get that. The thing is, when that contract was signed, it was 10 years, I think, into the life of the TIF,
mm-hmm.
and they were getting ready to declare a surplus.
Correct.
So there was money on the table, and the costs that were going to be allocated were allocated. So it wasn't a forward-looking clause, and everyone knew, right? The accounting was there on the table. So probably the school board at that time, didn't pay close attention to those provisions. They were probably more boilerplate-y kind of thingies that didn't matter given where they were in the actual life of the TIF. And so I think it's awful hard for us to sign that language as a going forward binding thing on the board. I think after these TIFs are around for a few years, just like with that one, if they get to the point where they're close to declaring a surplus, we could probably work out an IGA then, unless they're willing to, you know, negotiate that language. But I just don't want anyone thinking that either side here is being irrational or inappropriate. That is not the case. Go on clear record there. There is an honest disagreement, which is rational on both sides.
And shouldn't every deal be treated as a new, you know, entity?
Well, that was the position I know the board took. Circumstances have changed markedly since the last TIF. But,
So we'll see.
So moving ahead here, I did just want to inform the board and a couple of folks in the room will likely be in attendance. We do have the National Equity Project IAB learning event scheduled for this Wednesday right here in the Roosevelt LLC. This is really the focus of this is continuing to build leadership capacity of our Inclusiveness Advisory Board members. Been working on the agenda with Kathleen Osta, and we think it's going to be a pretty engaging night. So that starts at 6 here with a light dinner, and then the learning event begins at 6:30 and should last till around 8:30 or so. Anthony has a word or two to say about the Township Treasurer's Report.
If you look at page 92 of your packet, each year we receive some information from the Township School Treasurer's Report about their performance. We have an investment report which shows the total holdings of the township as of February 28th, 2018. And what we use that for is to see what they're investing in. We identify the weighted average maturity of all those investments because they have their own internal investment policy, which says once you have a weighted average maturity of these investments, they will use that to use it as a benchmark to see how they are faring against the U.S. Treasury bill rate for that given period of time. So last year was the first year that I can remember that they did not meet their portfolio investment policy of outperforming that U.S. Treasury bill rate. This year is now the second year that they have not done that. Just to be specific, they note that they have had a yield investment rate of return of 1.12%. While that was a 75% increase of the prior year of 0.64%, and I know we're dealing with very small percentages, but we know what the market is like these days. But when going through the exercise of finding their weighted average maturity, their closest corresponding benchmark is 1 year, agreeing that to the U.S. Treasury bill rate of 2.056, so they are not outperforming that. Obviously, 2.056 is higher than 1.12. We have once again noted this in the township. We're the only district that even analyzes this or even looks that they're meeting their own investment policies. And we have requested that they reassess their portfolio holdings and objectives. However, they know that they, or their response was that they need a portfolio that is heavily weighted towards liquidity. So you'll see a lot of things in the Illinois School District liquid asset funds and also shorter term CDs because they need to have liquid funds available when the various school districts are running bills or running payrolls. So rather than changing their portfolio, they may revise their investment policy to not have such a heavily burdened policy on outperforming the 10-year Treasury bill rate. Maybe they'll find another benchmark to use so that they will outperform that.
Meeting it.
Yeah. All right.
That's my report to you to know that we have noted it, that you have heard it, and that we have communicated.
They want to outperform Cousin Louie.
Could be.
And his pawn shop. Fantastic.
Any questions at all about their lack of earning a rate higher than their benchmark?
So the last item we wanted to mention tonight is probably, although it's at the end of the list, one of the most important. On May 7th through the 11th, District 90 will be celebrating our Staff Appreciation Week. As everyone, I think, in the room is aware and agrees, our faculty and staff in District 90 are the engine that keep our district moving forward. They're the ones who, I think, make this student-centered and inviting place for children and families. And they're an inspiration. And so we're pleased that we'll have the opportunity to appreciate them. The Board of Education has a small gift for them that's a bit of a surprise. And then we'll be celebrating with them as a group a little bit later in May by hosting the faculty and staff luncheon that the Board of Ed and the administration has been sponsoring for the last several years. We're grateful for the service that they provide, the leadership that they provide, and the care they give to the children in our charge. Very fortunate.
Okay, so we're about to go into closed session. I will point out that we will take certain actions after closed session on personnel items, as well as setting meeting agendas in the future. But at the moment, we are about to go into a closed session, according to Illinois statutes, for the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body or legal counsel for the public body, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee of the public body or against legal counsel for the public body to determine its validity. So may I get a motion to go into closed session?
So moved.
Okay, hold on. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.